You're listening to the New City Church podcast. These episodes are recorded live on Gadigal land. Sometimes the audio quality might not be perfect because what you're listening to is a conversation. We don't edit out the chatter. We think that's what makes it authentic. Wherever you're tuning in from, we hope you find this episode encouraging.
In prep for this, I just want to share this quickly. It has nothing really to do with the message, but just the fact that when Joel asked me to come, I don't take this sort of thing lightly. For someone to trust you with a space, a safe space, that is no small thing. And as people who facilitate a safe space, we understand what that means. And so firstly, I just want to say I'm honoured and I do not take this lightly, right? And that even in prep for this, God's been doing a few little weird things, right? Just in me. The fact that I brought this big hulking great Bible up, I don't normally do that. I have like another version, a smaller, nice and neat little version, or I use my phone and iPad like everyone else, right? This is coming back to, so I don't know what's happening in here. This might just be for me completely, but just the fact that God's doing these little things. So I just want to say thank you as well, because preparation for this has meant God's doing little things in me as well. So I just want to acknowledge that in this space too. Okay, so Matthew 5, 13 to 20. I'm going to read it. Okay. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You're the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay, I just want to acknowledge for a moment that those last verses can be one of those passages where people just want to skim right over, right? There's lots of like righteousness, Pharisees, all these things like that, right? We understand about salt and light. We understand the next verses are about murder and stuff. We know what those things are. Give me some of that. But when it gets to these sorts of things, what is he even saying, right? It can be a bit convoluted. So just an acknowledgement there that this can be a little bit tough going. Right? I'm just going to move this for a sec because that light is right in my eyeballs and I can't read. Okay, so the setting for this. This is Matthew chapter 5. Up to this point, Jesus has been baptized, faced temptation, started teaching. He's got the first of his disciples. By this point, he doesn't have all of the 12 that we know. Some of those are still to come. So we don't know how many disciples that he has at the moment. And his teaching has started gathering crowds, right? So not just where he's in Nazareth, he's in Galilee. Nazareth is a place in Galilee. He's not just there, but people from Jerusalem, Judea, from Syria, from the 10 cities, Decapolis. So these are like Greek Hellenistic cities, Syria. These are not just Jewish people coming to him. That's just a little bit of a sidebar, right? These people who are coming, these crowds are starting to come. And in response to this, Jesus goes up a little mountainside and some of his disciples go with him. Again, depending on the translation, it's him and his disciples. Some say it's him and his disciples and some of the crowd. We don't know. We know definitely disciples. We know definitely at least four. We don't know how many, right? I don't think that's really relevant, but it's, you know, it is in my ADHD brain, goes on another stream out here and goes, what is that about? That's exciting. Like, I put a pin in that, don't worry, right? So all these people are gathering, right? And so in response to these crowds, Jesus goes up the mountainside, gives the Beatitudes, which I believe you've all gone through the Beatitudes and things like that. Now, I think it's interesting that in response to these crowds, Jesus goes up the hill, goes up the mountain. And a bit of, you know, it doesn't say this, so this is a bit of poetic license. But I think if this is the first time Jesus and the disciples are facing these crowds, he's probably also facing the humanity of this. If you have crowds suddenly following you, you can either go into a bit of a panic or a bit of a, hey, aren't we awesome? Right? The first thing that Jesus does in this teaching is tell everyone, just chill a bit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the poor in spirit. You know, don't worry about the crowds. Right? And even I think when he goes into salt and earth, salt and light, don't worry about the crowds. Or they're coming for you to cheer, or they're coming for you for persecution and criticism. Don't worry about the crowds. You are the salt of the earth. Keep being you. You are the light of the world. Keep being you. Whatever comes, whatever happens, keep being you. Pause. Oh, I will routinely, if there's a little side issue, I will go pause just to bring in a little side note and then go back. So here is a pause, again, I think is interesting. Jesus was not saying, you are the light of the world and you are the salt of the earth to Christians. Right? We start loved. We start the light of the world. We start the salt of the earth. That's how Jesus was telling these people. In this message that I'm giving and the role that you play in this, do not ever lose touch with the fact you start loved, you are the light, and you are the salt. And now I've lost my place. I haven't even opened my notes. Can you tell I'm nervous? Well, I just gave that away, didn't I? Right. So then at this point, it becomes really, really, really important to Jesus for him to stress that he has come not to undo the Torah and the prophets. He hasn't come to abolish the law and the prophets. He's come to fulfill them. It is really important to Jesus that he says this. It is so important that he goes on to say, in fact, if anyone changes any little bit of this, then actually they're the least in the kingdom. And if you follow it, then actually you're the greatest, right? So how does this work? How is it that Jesus is coming to say, I am coming to fulfill the Torah. I've got a new way. There is a new kingdom. There is a new way. There is a new covenant. But also we're not doing away with the old. That is because when Jesus came to fulfill the Torah and the prophets, he wasn't getting rid of them. He was showing how that fits in the narrative of the story. The Torah and the prophets, the law and the prophets always pointed to something more, always pointed to something bigger, always. And what Jesus was doing is he was saying, this is happening right now. We've been told by the prophets, we've been told there is a new thing coming. Jeremiah 31 verses 33 and 34 talk about how there is a time coming when I will write my law on their hearts. Where you won't need to say to your neighbour or to your brother, no God. You won't need to teach anyone because it will be right here on their hearts, from the least to the greatest. Right? Jeremiah 31, 33 and 34 is saying this is going to happen. In the book of Hebrews, basically the whole of the book of Hebrews talks about how it happened. It explains what happened. chapter 8 has a verse, I think it's 10, that also references that same thing. This is what Jesus did. When Jesus came, Jesus was part of that transition. He brought in that transition from the new to the old, from the old to the new, not from the new to the old, from the old to the new. And this passage right here is showing us where the moment he is telling his disciples, for the first time that we're aware of, this is coming. This is coming. This promise, it's coming. It's here. It's here. The reason that Jesus didn't do away with the Torah and the prophets, when those things were created, when the Ten Commandments were created, for example, and the other 613 laws, right? By the way, that wasn't just Moses sitting down and writing out the first five books, what we know as the Pentateuch, right? That was not what happened, right? It wasn't there was the Ten Commandments and then all of these other things at the same time. Over time, like, we know that there has been some, like, things added in, like with Leviticus and things like that. They're called the priestly editions, right? Because what happens is, when you're reading the Torah, it's the direct connection with God. God gives these rules, these guides for how to live in relationship with God, how to live in relationship with others, right? And the way that they know how to apply this to their life is they got to get some wisdom. They go to the Torah and they meditate on it. They think about it, they meditate, right? And then they face different situations where they're like, well, how do we deal with this? When they were in exile, they didn't have access to the temple. When they were in exile or captivity, they didn't have access to sacrifices and the ways that they used to be able to do things. They had to be able to use these things that were applied. So there were the priests, right? The priests became the prophets. The prophets became the Pharisees and the teachers, the people who would look at the Torah, study the Torah, know what it meant, be able to know how it applies in every situation, under every circumstance. This passage ends with Jesus saying that your righteousness needs to surpass that of the Pharisees and the teachers. Well, how on earth is that going to happen? These are the people who dedicate their whole life to knowing what all of this is about. When Jesus puts into perspective the Torah and the prophets, and he says, I have not come to do away with it. I've come to fulfill. I've come to complete. I've come to expand. I've come to put into perspective what this means going forward. He does these things where he takes the old, takes the Ten Commandments, and he summarizes them. Love the Lord your God with your heart, mind, and soul. He takes the old, he explains it, and he expands on it. Jesus' new teachings don't do away with the old, they explain them. Because for so long, these laws that have been given, by which people led every moment of their life, was determined by what was written in these laws and the prophets. From the time they arose to the time they went to bed, from birth until death, every aspect of their being was determined by one or more of these laws. Right? And what had happened is, when God gave them the Ten Commandments and then these other laws as a way to connect with God, their world shrank so that that became their kind of only access almost to God. They accessed God through these things instead of being just an access point. I think it's really interesting that in Exodus 20, when the Ten Commandments are given to Moses, he comes down the mountain and the people are so terrified And God said, you know, come closer. Tell them to come closer when they hear the shofar, come on up. Right? Don't come so close, like don't burst in on me, but come up the mountain. Right? Come up when they hear it. And Moses told them and they went, oh, nah. You tell Moses and Moses will tell us. You tell Moses and Moses will tell us. And that set how they interacted with God. And now here's Jesus going, well, actually, that's how we used to do things. That's how things have been done for a reason, because God still wanted connection and he's going to give you connection. You're going to get it, right? If you need to have a person in between you, God's not moving. If you need to put someone else in between you, God's still there. God's still there. God's not going anywhere. God's not afraid of you having someone else in there. God's still talking, right? And Jesus is saying now, remember what he said to Jeremiah? Do you remember what was said in Jeremiah? Well, I'm telling you now, I'm not coming to abolish the old. I'm coming to tell you what the old actually meant. I'm coming to tell you that you followed the letter of the law, and that's all well and good, but we need to follow the spirit of the law. It's not just about what it says, it's about what it means. The Ten Commandments mean love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself. The rest of Jesus' teachings, love your enemies. All right. So if we're supposed to then have this righteousness that surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers, how do we do that? First of all, what is righteousness? Right? Besides one of those Christian jargony words that kind of is out there that we try and grasp and people know where it fits appropriately in a sentence but can't actually quite define, right? It's one of those words a lot of times. Outside of the church, where would you hear that? Well, 1980s surfers used to use it a little bit. But outside of that, right? So in a nutshell, righteousness is right living with God and others. That's it. Right living with God and others. Okay, well, what does that mean? Honestly, what does that mean? Right? Well, up until this point, someone's righteousness was proven by how much they adhered to the Torah and the prophets. If you were adhering by those, then you were honouring God and you were honouring the other people around you, because that's what those laws were built on. Even the ones that we think are strange. Eye for an eye, how is that honouring someone? Well, actually, eye for an eye came about because it was limiting retribution, right? It wasn't saying that person has harmed you, therefore you must go and harm them back to the equivalent. It was saying you cannot take back from them more. It was to stop heavy-handed, because that's what was happening, right? In the context of these different laws and things that were written, there's actually quite a bit of freedom, right? We look back and see limitation. For them, a lot of this was freedom for them, right? So right living with God and others, for the people of Jesus' day, like up to the time of Jesus' time, righteousness was measured by how well you followed all of these things. But if the meaning has changed now, if we're not supposed to follow the letter of it, but we're supposed to follow the spirit of it, what does that mean? And what does it mean to be righteous? And how can my righteousness surpass that of the Pharisees and the teachers? Because surely they understand the meaning as well, right? Well, you know what? Let's just hope I remember what my notes say. Some ways of right living. Nope, I'm going to use my notes. Which I cannot read. If God is in the process, if in this moment, Jesus is in the process of saying, hey, this transition is here. And connection with God and righteousness, access to God, is no longer coming from an external source, but it's going to change into the transformation of, like, an internal transforming done by grace. A constant transforming done by grace. It's not a one and done deal. Just like with the Torah and the prophets, you're constantly going, how does this apply? How does this apply today? How does this apply? It's the same now, right? We had the Torah that told us what to do. And then we had Jesus who showed us what to do. And now we have the Holy Spirit constantly with us doing that same thing because we have the laws written on our hearts. We take those same principles and we apply them and go, okay, but now it's not just about everyone being on even footing. Now it's about living this way, being the salt and being the light, no matter what comes. How we live righteously is acknowledging in every moment, in every interaction, I am the salt of the earth. I bring flavor, I preserve, I am valuable, and I bring that to every interaction that I'm in. And so is the person sitting next to me, across the room, the person that I'm in an interaction with. I am the image of God, and so are they. Living righteously is remembering, I am the light of the world. I can highlight and spotlight, I can guide, push away darkness. And remembering that with every interaction that I have. And so do they, so are they. It is seeing in each person the image of God and responding to that. It used to be the letter of the law leads to legalism, right? And legalism leads to focusing on the act, not the person. And then the person becomes a tool by which retribution is made, and it's to fix it. Right? The person becomes a tool to fix something that's been broken. The spirit of the law sees the person and the situation as something to be elevated back into its rightful space so that it can see and live according to the knowledge that they are loved, light, salt. Right? Jesus knew. Not everyone is going to be okay with this. When we live righteously, righteously, that's a right word, right? Righteously, righteously. When we live righteously, not everyone's going to be okay with it. We might face criticism and we might face persecution, specifically because this is what we're doing. Jesus dealt with that a few verses back. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven, right? God knows that, and God says, pursue justice, pursue righteousness anyway. Pursue it anyway. And when that happens, respond righteously. God knows so much it was going to happen. Jesus knew it was going to happen. It was already starting to happen to him. Right? He was already being questioned. He would go into synagogues. He would engage with leaders and teachers and Pharisees. He kept doing it. His motives were always questioned. Everything about him was constantly questioned. Jesus knew what it was to be misunderstood. Jesus knew what it was to be persecuted. And he came. And he came as an act of the righteousness of God. This isn't a one-way street. This is a two-way street. God is acting in right relationship with us. And by saying, I see you. I value you. I love you. I'm sending Jesus as an act of my love and value. That's God's part of this righteous living. Also, a promise to never leave you or forsake you. Those two things we can count on. So when we live righteously, we remember who we are. We remember what God did by sending Jesus as the act of righteousness, the act of saying, no matter how you respond to me, I am acting out of love. I am acting out of goodness. Right? I haven't even found those bits in my notes I wanted. Why am I keep going back to them? There's no point. Righteousness and justice are linked a lot. I would say always, but it's probably, you know, I want to be as accurate as I can. A lot, right? And righteousness has always been important to God. If we take the Bible as our source, right? Pause. I don't take the Bible as the only source. I've had quite an adventure with the Bible, right? Quite an adventure indeed. And I do not take the Bible as the only source, but I do take it as a source. And in this, I'm using the Bible as the example, okay? Throughout the Bible, throughout the Old Testament, God takes righteousness really seriously and is constantly calling people to it. Constantly calling people to it. It's why the Ten Commandments are such a big deal, because it's constantly, this is how you will live in good relationship with me and others. This is how it's done. Two things. One, God's relationship with humanity, with the children of Israel, did not begin with the Torah and the prophets. God's relationship began right at the beginning. And before the Torah, God was known as friend to Abraham. He was known as provider. God was known as redeemer. God was known as rescuer. God fed and watered people. God protected. The relationship between God and humanity through God and the Israelites themselves did not begin with the Torah. So when they only looked to the Torah and the prophets, that is why it shrank. And Jesus was able to say, let me put this in the perspective of how God sees us, of how God loves you. God's act of righteousness doesn't fit into the letter of the Torah. But the Torah and the prophets fit into the narrative that God has with God's relationship with us. Knowing that we are part of a bigger story, that they were part of a bigger story, knowing that we are light and we are salt and we are loved is part of the bigger narrative. Right? Micah says, I'm going to paraphrase it, you probably all know it, act justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. That is right living. Just before it says that, it's like, what is required of you? What does God require? What is right living according to God? Act justly, love mercy. You don't give mercy to people who, like, mercy is not, an opportunity for mercy is not applicable to someone where you don't have the higher ground morally, so to speak, right? When there is an opportunity to show mercy, it means that there is an opportunity to not. And some of those might feel really, really justified. And walk humbly with your God. Love the Lord your God. Love others. Love yourself. Love your enemies. when we are in a situation of power or privilege, what we can do, how do we live righteously? View that other person that we are in interaction with as the image of God and act accordingly through the lens of the fact that they are the image of God and they are the light and they are the salt and I am the light and I am the salt, and no matter how they respond, that is my identity, and I will live from my values. I will live from my values. If you are not in a position of power or privilege, respond with seeing yourself, the image of God in you. And treat yourself with dignity and love, because you are the image of God, the salt and the light. In every encounter, dignity, love, respect, seeing the image of God in that person, holding every situation up to the light of God. Don't know what to do here. I need some wisdom. Trust in God. Lean into God. One of the things that is important is being able to lean in to God. God is not the one who put Moses in between God's self and the people. The people did that. God has never been the one to put anything between us. God has always been the one. I'm right here. You can go to the depths of the sea, and I am right here loving you. And for some reason, we have such a hard time with the concept of being loved. It's easier for us to be legalistic. It's easier for us to put something between. And yet God graciously, persistently, consistently reaches out, and as an act of righteousness sends Jesus. And Jesus is like, this is what's here. This transformation, this is the next step. This is the next step. And how you will surpass the righteousness of the Pharisees and the teachers. It's not about dragging them down. It's not about dragging down what was. Right? This passage, and a lot of what I see when I read not just the story of Jesus, but also the beginnings of the early church in Acts, I see the same similar sort of thing happening now with the wave of deconstruction that's been happening for 10 years, more than 10 years it's been happening. But it's impacted the church has been the last seven years. It's been really big impact on the church. Right, there's this change, and whenever change comes, we have an opportunity to put something between us and God, or to lean in. And sometimes those things that we have put between us and God, sometimes those things that I have put between me and God, have let me down. And I've projected that onto God. I wasn't going to say any of this. I've projected that onto God. And then I've had a moment where God's like, I'm here. Just all casual. I'm here. I'm here. And I think that what Jesus was saying to those disciples and all those people on the hill as he's beginning to say this transformation is starting, pretty exciting when you think about it. They've been waiting a long time. That transformation was coming. I think that same thing is being said of us. Hold every interaction that we have with the church, with others, with people outside who don't understand. As a woman who is married to another woman, who is also a minister, a lot of you might have also faced the same thing, of you live in a land of the in-between. You're a both and you fit in neither and you fit in both. And you understand both and they don't understand you. Right? And with the rise of more and more places, this beautiful space, there are more and more of these conversations, and I believe we are being called the same way. Let your righteousness surpass that of where you came from. Let your righteousness surpass the way it's always been. Let your righteousness be not bound to any of those things at all. Let it be bound to the fact that you are in relationship with God, who, as an act of love, gave Jesus to show us how we can be in relationship, how we can be salt of the earth, how we can be light. We start loved. We start seen and known. We start light. Loved, seen and known, those are all outside of us, right? Those are things towards us. We start light. That is who I have been made from conception. I am salt of, I'm preaching to myself right now. I'm salt of the earth from conception. And do not let any situation from any space, whether it comes from the old or it comes from the new or it comes from outside, do not let any of those things change you. Do not let any of those things dim your light. Do not let any of those things take the tang from your salt. Right? Because you, as you, and yes, we're in relationship with God. God changes us from glory to glory, new creation, all those things does not in any way, shape or form cancel out what I am saying. Right? You are a glorious being created intentionally. That was the other thing I was going to say. One of the other ways to live righteously, intentional relationships. We are all in relationships with people all of the time. We just don't acknowledge all of them. I live in a cul-de-sac with 16 houses. I am not in constant daily contact with all of those people, right? But I'm in relationship with them. The longer you are in an intentional relationship, you put your focus and your time and your energy and your love and your presence in that place, into that relationship, the more attuned you become to the nuances of what will be right in that relationship. God does that with us. God is so attuned to our nuances. And then we sing songs like, "You just want the presence." And when we're in the presence of God, the more we're in the presence of God, the more attuned we become to the nuance of what is right in that moment with God. And because God is in each of us, it helps us to be attuned to the nuance of what is right with others. It's written on our hearts. We have the Holy Spirit. Jesus showed us how. Remember who we are. Remember whose we are. Remember that everything even the Torah and the prophets is a small bit in the bigger plan, the bigger narrative of God's relationship with us. And that is what I think this passage is about. Right? You start loved. I've had the biggest problem turning that on myself. Loved took me a long time. I was a very good girl. Right? Grew up in the church. I was a very good girl. Trauma, all the other things go with it. You become a very good girl, right? It's good girl equals acceptance equals less trauma. You get left alone, right? I was a very good girl. And I thought that constantly giving, facing outwards, it's not supposed to be about me. It's not supposed to be about me. That's just not true. I would used to be able to stand here and I could look at you all and say, you are. But saying, I am, oh goodness, that was difficult. Oh gosh, that was hard. So as someone who has adventured through this, let me be an example to some of you who might be in that same space and tell you that I can stand now with humility and say, I am loved. I am the light of the world. I am the salt of the earth. I am seen and known and loved by God. And me knowing that, accepting that, living that out, is part of the narrative of God's relationship with us. And is part of living out righteously. I was going to ask, is it possible to ask Brad to play again? Can you do Build My Life, please? For me, the notion of living righteously, because of who I am, I'm not asking everyone else to do this, but I am quite a dramatic person in some capacities. And so for me, the notion of building my life upon the knowledge that I am loved and that I am called to live out that love, and everything God has ever said to anyone ever, including throughout the Bible, is underpinned by that notion. I will build my life on that. It is a firm foundation. And in this passage, imagine how exciting it was for them to, when they finally got it. I don't know if they got it right in this moment, but when they finally got that, they were living in that moment where everything was changing. We are living in a moment right now where everything is changing. I used to think, God said a few things 8-7 years ago about what was going to happen with the church. And I excitedly went, oh, it's going to be like a revival. I didn't even like the word revival. It's going to be a revival. We're going to be a reformation is what's happening. How do we live it out? How excited they must have been knowing they were living through that, and we get to live through an exciting moment, and then advice is the same. Live righteously. God, others, us, enemies. Love justice. Act justly. Love mercy. Walk humbly with your God.